Shalom, everyone. This is Elliot Schoenberg, the International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. Welcome to Chodesh Tov. Chodesh Tov is a 10-minute monthly podcast which reveals to our listeners and wants to regularly inform them on the current thinking on a wide variety of scholarship, new scholarship, in many fields of Jewish studies. I am particularly delighted today that our guest rabbi, our guest scholar, is Dr. Benjamin Edelman Skolnick, who's been my friend for more than 30 years. He has been the rabbi of Temple Beth Shalom in Hamden, Connecticut, for more than 30 years. He is the author of 11 books and over 80 articles, taught at four different universities, currently adjunct professor of Jewish studies at the Southern Connecticut State University. And excitingly, he has been a biblical consultant on an archaeological dig in Egypt, the Northwest Sinai Archaeological Expedition, which has been pursuing the route of the Exodus. His topic today is a contemporary look at the story of Hanukkah, which is his current research. Welcome, Rabbi Skolnick.
Thank you, Rabbi Schoenberg. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start. So, Ben, tell us a little bit about the background here. What's the history here? Who have been the most important scholars who've looked at this, and what have they been saying about the story of Hanukkah?
Well, let's go back even further than that first to two books that didn't make it into the Bible, but books of the Apocrypha, First Maccabees and Second Maccabees. And unlike the way they sound, they were written by different authors, and the second one doesn't follow the first. They are two different versions of why the story of Hanukkah, that is, the persecution of the Jews by Antiochus IV in the 160s BCE, two different takes, two different versions on what happened. And First Maccabees is a revolution. It's the bad guys persecuted the Jewish people, wouldn't let them do their religion. The good guys led by a small band, this is a story that every Jewish kid knows, Mattathias and his five sons. And Jewish kids can often recite the names of the sons because it's a very wonderful and dramatic story. They are the Maccabees. They're a small band. They're a few against the many. They rise up and, like something in Star Wars, of a little bunch of good guys beating the big bad guys, they take blows against the empire, and miracle of miracles, they win. They rededicate the temple. That's what Hanukkah means. But that's not the end of the story in First Maccabees, because the temple is rededicated, but they do not have their political independence. And they fight on, and eventually they win in their autonomy, their political independence, so they have religious independence and political independence, and they form the first Jewish state in hundreds of years. And by the way, the last Jewish state for nearly 2,000 years before 1948 and the creation of the State of Israel. So that's one version. It's good guys versus bad guys. It's a revolution. It's very clear. But Second Maccabees is a completely different version, but it tells a very different story, and that is the story of a civil war of Jewish people who were Hellenists, who wanted to be good Greeks, and they were the ones who persecuted their fellow Jews. They were in cahoots with the bad guys of the Seleucid Empire, but it was really their fault, and they instigated it. And the reason why the Maccabees were such a small band was because everybody else was against them, and everybody else no one else wanted to resist, and no one else wanted to preserve Judaism. And so it's pictured as, in both stories, as a vital juncture in Jewish history. Is Judaism going to survive? Is this the end? And if it weren't for this small bunch, it would have been the end. But Second Maccabees tells still a different story. The Maccabees, yes, were important, but that's not why the Jewish people really won. They won because the good Jews beat the bad Jews, but also because the good Jews allowed themselves to be martyred. There's a famous story that's come down to us, is the story of Hannah and her seven sons, and God took pity and compassion on these martyrs, and because of those martyrs, that's why the Maccabees could win. So the big historical word is causation. Why were they able to win this miracle? It wasn't because of the strength of the Maccabees, like First Maccabee says, it's because God strengthened the hands of those Maccabees because of what the martyrs had done. So that's the original, and we're talking about books that were written in the 100s BCE, the two versions. Now, fast forward to your question. In the 20th century, there were two famous scholars, Bickerman and Cherikover. And Bickerman basically said, the way the second Maccabees tells the story is true. There were assimilationist Jews, and there were more conservative Jews, conservative with a small c, and they were having a civil war. And it's very interesting because Bickerman came from Europe, and he came from a Europe where you had assimilationist German Jews, and you had conservative Jews. And so he sort of saw that played back in those days, and whereas Cherikover, who lived in Israel, saw the Maccabees as the forerunner of the Israeli fighters who created the State of Israel. So the scholars' own background, I think, enabled them or made them see either First Maccabees in the case of Cherikover or Second Maccabees in the case of Bickerman as the real story. And this was sort of at an impasse for decades. And when you and I, Rabbi Schoenberg, went to rabbinical school, there were these two versions. By the way, and the only thing I want to correct about your introduction is we've been friends for 40 years, not just 30, but, you know, you can think what you want. But we're getting older. Anyway, so there's been an impasse for a very long time. But people were always, you know, trying to find there, you know, some way to reconcile it. A very judicious book by Shia Cohn, who was our teacher from, I think it was called From the Maccabees to the Mishnah, and Cohn said, you know what, it's probably both. It's probably that there was a revolution by the conservative Jews, but that it also was a kind of civil war. You know, just to make an analogy, you can call the American Revolution a revolution, but in certain parts of this country, there was a civil war going on between Tories and patriots. So I don't know if I'm responding to your question, but in the arc of scholarship in the 20th century really begins with those two sides, both stemming from different books, the First Maccabees and Second Maccabees.
Great. Okay, so now let's move to the present day. How is the field changing? What's motivating that change? Are there new scholars? What's the new scholarship saying about it?
Okay, well, there's a recent book called Apocalypse Against Empire by Anathea Poirier Young, and she is more on the side of Cherikover in a certain way. She's looking at theologies of resistance in early Judaism, and she's teasing out of the sources the fact that even though the Seleucid Empire was ruling for centuries, the things weren't so good, and that there was resistance, and the Maccabees were not such a new phenomenon. So that's one of the things that's going on. And another scholar, Eric Gruen, wrote a very provocative essay some years ago in a book called Hellenistic History and Culture, and he came up with something interesting. He said, let's look at the other side, at Antiochus IV. Why would he do this? And to add to his question, think about this fact. The religious persecution of the Jews was also a religious persecution of a religion. Now remember, these are polytheists. They don't care who has how many gods. It's not like it's monotheism that leads to religious persecution when one religion thinks it has the only way to heaven. But as we've experienced in the last, you know, 2,000 years with Christian persecutions and Muslim persecutions, because the idea was you have to be us. But polytheists didn't care. So Gruen asked a wonderful question. You know, why would Antiochus IV have persecuted a religion? And, you know, again to say it, it was the first religious persecution in human history. And so that is so out of character for these kinds of Hellenistic kings. These kingdoms were corporations. All they cared about was money and armies, and the armies were making the money. It was a big corporation. Why should they care that this little Jewish people in Judea was practicing Judaism? What did it? And so Gruen comes says something had happened with Antiochus IV, and he thinks he knows what it was. Antiochus IV tried to conquer Egypt, and the Romans came and stopped him, and he was humiliated. And so on a day called the Day of Eleusis, He had to leave Egypt. He was humiliated. And his whole empire, and these empires were held by a thread. And it was the perception of power. So he had to do something to reemphasize his power, to say to his empire, it's true the Romans made me leave Egypt, but I'm in a really great shape. And if you try to rebel against me, I'm going to come zap you. So who's on the way back from Egypt to Antioch in Syria? The Jews in Judea. And he says, you know, there's one thing that these guys, these Jews, are known for. It's strict adherence to their religion. If I can move them away from their religion, right, I can prove that I am still in control, that the Romans didn't have me beat, that everybody still better be loyal to me, that the empire better not collapse, or I'm going to get them. So that is, to me, a very intriguing thesis, which set me, you know, on my own path of scholarship.
Great. So that's a very good segue to the next question, which is, what are you working on, and what are the issues that you want to share with us that your research is revealing at the current moment?
Okay, so I went from there, thank you, and I started looking from the other side, not just one day in Antiochus IV's life, but his whole career. And I've been writing one article after another about the life of Antiochus IV. In other words, what led him? What's his biography? What led him to that fateful decision to persecute the Jews? Again, Shia Cohn says, you know what, I don't know if First Maccabees is right or Second Maccabees is right, if Bickerman's right or Cherikov is right, but there was a persecution. We know that from historical records. So the question is not, did this happen? The question is, you know, why did it happen? So I've gone to a different source. And the source precedes First and Second Maccabees. It's the book of Daniel in the Hebrew Bible. Of all the books in the Hebrew Bible, even though it's not found last in the table of contents, it was written last. And it was written right in the middle of the persecution, of the Antiochene, the persecution of Antiochus IV against the Jews. And I've been going verse by verse, very slowly. I know it's going to sound crazy, but I've written five articles on five verses, one verse each. And what I have found is that the book of Daniel, written by contemporaries, by people living during that persecution, is an incredible key to what really happened. As I've been going through it very, very slowly, I have been finding that it matches the history, that in very cryptic, supposedly prophetic language, the book of Daniel is actually more accurate than the first Maccabees or Second Maccabees, and can lead to theories that I think are going to give a new kind of synthesis about what happened.
So to summarize up, so summarize your sort of five articles, and so are you going back to say that the story is correct as we know the story? What's your conclusion based on your research so far?
Okay. The fact is there was a persecution. The fact is the Maccabees did rise up and did win. What I'm emphasizing is, again, is why did Antiochus IV do that? And I start from the point that Gruen has, but there's a lot more. And what nobody, except for one guy, a guy named Jonathan Goldstein, who is from a family of conservative rabbis, I want to point out, Jonathan Goldstein had a theory. That he wrote in a book, a commentary of First Maccabees in the 1980s, and because he had started to do what I'm trying to do, to look at the life of Antiochus IV, and found that Antiochus IV was a hostage in Rome earlier in his life, before he became the king, and witnessed a religious persecution, which really the persecution we're talking about, which everybody says was the first religious persecution in history, may have been preceded by another one in Rome, where the Romans attacked a particular cult, the Bacchic cult of Dionysus and everything, and that Antiochus IV might have seen the power of persecution to display your power. Gruen doesn't say this, and Goldstein himself, who came up with this theory, then rejected it in his next book. But I still think it has great merit. What I'm finding is, and I'm trying to summarize this very quickly, is that by looking at the people who were involved in the administration of Antiochus IV and a power struggle that was going on there. There were some who said, in order to have a strong empire, we have to be nice to the peoples under our control. And there are others who said, in order to keep this empire under control, we have to be mean to the peoples under our control. And there was a power struggle between them, and the people who won for a little while, for the few years that we're talking about, were the people who said, you know, we have to be strict and mean and persecute. And this is exactly what the book of Daniel leads us to. As soon as Antiochus IV was dead and his son took over, he said, you know, what are we doing? Why are we persecuting them? Who cares if they have one God or they keep kosher or they have the Torah? What difference does it make to us? So as soon as Antiochus IV died, you know, the whole thing went away. And because the other side had come back into power. So what I'm talking about is that we can find in the book of Daniel this evidence that, which turns out to be true, you know, from the other side, that it wasn't so much a struggle between Jews and Jews as between the people on the other side trying to figure out how to rule a kingdom.
Thank you, Rabbi Skolnick. Terrific. I'd like to remind everyone that this has been Chodesh Tov, a monthly 10-minute podcast sponsored by the International Rabbinical Assembly. This has been your host, Elliot Salo Schoenberg, wishing everyone a Chodesh Tov.
Hello?